at its core, a blockchain is a distributed database. So essentially, it's taking any store of record that previously was only stored at centralized repositories, like maybe a database owned by Google or a bank, and taking that and creating multiple copies of it and distributing it to different participants around the world. That's one aspect. That's what Bitcoin gave us.
I think anybody on the planet, especially if you're in financial services, should be paying attention to this. There's the whole cryptocurrency discussion, which is really transitioning into a crypto asset discussion. You know, the tokenization of underlying assets, that's going to change the way we think about financial securities and how people hold securities. And then there's all these sort of blockchain applications just in the corporate sector. So thinking about two competitive firms in the same industry, one's adopting blockchain, one's not. Should that affect where we're investing in that industry? And then finally, could blockchain change wealth management itself?
Welcome to Better Conversations, Better Outcomes, presented by BMO Global Asset Management. I'm Emily Larson.
And I'm Ben Jones. And on this show, we're going to explore the world of wealth advising from every angle, providing you with actionable ideas designed to improve outcomes for advisors and their clients.
The views expressed here are those of the participants and not those of BMO Global Asset Management, its affiliates, or subsidiaries.
Blockchain. You've heard about it 1,000 times by now. It's one of the buzziest concepts of the last year or so. But what is it really? And how does it relate to wealth management?
We're going to explore this with two experts. First, joining us from Chicago is Professor Lamont Black from the Department of Finance at DePaul University. You heard him at the top of the show explaining why advisors should care about this topic.
And second, in Toronto, we sat down with Adita Shankar, Vice President of Trading Products for BMO Capital Markets. These two guests have been researching blockchain and its impacts on financial markets for many years. And today we're going to help shed some light on this intensely hyped technology.
We're going to touch briefly on the history of blockchain and cryptocurrencies. Then we're going to dive into the benefits and pitfalls of blockchain technology. And finally, we'll discuss some of the use cases and ways that you can discuss blockchain with your clients. But first, let's define blockchain. Here's Lamont.
I've thought a lot over the last few years about how to try and explain this simply. This is a question I get asked, by friends and family members. So one way to think about it is just to break down the word itself, block and chain. So block, one way to think about that is a group of transactions that would be combined and then processed. Chain would be linking those blocks together. And so one way to think of blockchain is it is a record or a history of transactions. Another term that your listeners might have heard is distributed ledger technology. And so blockchain is also an innovation because it's a different way of thinking about a ledger system. So rather than having individual ledgers that then have to communicate with each other, you have a distributed ledger shared among the parties so that everyone can see it, and then it is maintained and updated by the community. And so it's very different than the way we do things today.
And maybe if you could just maybe share a little bit of a brief history or a back history of blockchain as a technology, because it's actually been around for quite a while, but you just recently in the last several years started hearing a lot about it.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of hype around blockchain, but it has been around for a long time. I would say the history is really in computer science, you know, in the field of cryptography. I like to think about the role of Bitcoin in that history, and we'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But it existed prior to Bitcoin, and there's a great computer science paper that talks about the Byzantine generals problem. It's a system where you have multiple parties that are trying to reach agreement, and the question is how many of those would have to be truthful versus malicious in order to end up with the right decision. And blockchain is a system for solving the Byzantine generals problem. And so it has this kind of history in computer science.
You mentioned Bitcoin. And so some people misassociate blockchain and Bitcoin. I hear that all the time. But Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. And could you share a little bit about why people might misassociate blockchain and Bitcoin, and then how the technology is being used outside of cryptocurrencies?
Sure. So, you know, the two are very much related, but they're not the same. I like to emphasize, actually, the relationship between the two, because I almost feel like the current trend is to separate them entirely. You know, Bitcoin bad, blockchain good. But I would say the reason we're talking about blockchain today is largely because of Bitcoin, which was introduced, you know, the Satoshi Nakamoto white paper came out in the fall of 2008 during the heart of the financial crisis. And Bitcoin was an innovation in currency. It's one way to think of it is digital money. The title, it talks about peer-to-peer electronic cash. But the technology that makes Bitcoin work is blockchain. And so Bitcoin could not exist without blockchain, but there are many other applications outside the cryptocurrency space.
And, you know, it's interesting because crypto, as you mentioned, is kind of the sexy side of the blockchain, but the technology itself is fairly broadly used. Can you give some examples of how it's used outside of currency?
Sure. So I think the application that I hear a lot of talk about is supply chain management. And I think that is a fairly straightforward application, because if you think of this definition I gave, you know, blockchain is a record of transactions. That's really what's happening in a supply chain. You have some sort of raw good that is being passed through this chain of different value add components or nodes until it reaches the end user. And so tracking that product through those different steps in the supply chain is very similar to what you're doing with a blockchain. And so the technology works very well for that. Another example is how it's being applied in renewable energy. So if you think about traditional energy, like we burn coal in a power plant and then that energy is distributed to a circle of users. If you think about renewable energy, you now have the users themselves producing the energy and buying the energy. And so it's more of a network. And blockchain can be very useful for recording transactions when you have that level of complexity, where you have individual nodes that are both producers and users.
There are many aspects and use cases for blockchain, and we'll explore more later in this episode. Where Lamont uses Ledger to describe a blockchain, Adita uses the word database in his definition. He also brought up Ethereum, an open-source, blockchain-based distribution computing platform. Listen as he explains.
When you look at Ethereum, it gives you smart contracts. And what is smart contracts is it's basically computer programs, just like a distributed store of data. These are computer programs that run on like a distributed network of computers. So essentially, the big takeaway there is that previously you would have one computer program running on one central server and one company controlled that. And so essentially, theoretically, that company had all the power to go rogue and do all kinds of things when things maybe didn't work out for them. With blockchain, once you deploy a program onto the network, that's it. Like that program is going to run the way it has been programmed from the moment it's been deployed. So the big takeaway there is that a lot of human interactions that required expensive intermediaries like lawyers and accountants and a lot of those functions, I wouldn't say you can replace them, but I think you can definitely, by putting them on the blockchain, you can streamline a lot of those functions a lot more efficiently. The way I look at it is Ethereum gives you the distributed storage and it gives you smart contracts. So that essentially allows you to, like, for any real world interaction that you require to store transactional data and also enact on that transactional data. So a simple example of that would be, let's say you and I want to take part in a e-commerce trade, right? And you need to ship me something and I need to give you money. And one way we could do that is I could wait for you to ship the goods to me and then I could just wire you the money. Well, there's counterparty risk over there because I could receive the product and then, you know, I could just forget you, right? So one way you could put this on Ethereum is the two of us could deploy a smart contract where you say that, well, you're going to lock up some Ether into the smart contract. And until you've done that, I won't ship you the good. And because that whole act of like locking up collateral into that smart contract can be tracked by you, So once I've done that, you can actually go onto the Ethereum system and see that, yes, my money is in there. You can ship me the good and then, you know, can withdraw the money. And the smart contract can be programmed in a way that only you are allowed to withdraw this. So that's a very simple use case. I mean, of course, there's a lot of assumptions around there in terms of how I might not withdraw the money or there might not be a bug or anything. There's a lot of assumptions around there. But this is essentially what Ethereum will allow you to do is where you would need something like an Amazon, right? Like a huge behemoth like Amazon to guarantee such a level of efficiency. Like you can enable that at a very like peer-to-peer way using a platform like Ethereum.
We're going to peel back the onion a little bit deeper into the technology that makes systems like Bitcoin work. We're also going to explore the benefits and downsides of using blockchain technology. Lamont mentioned the Satoshi Nakamoto paper earlier, and we're going to pick up that conversation now. The paper was written by an unknown blockchain pioneer who used this as a pen name. Mr. Nakamoto's paper is linked in our show notes page at bmogam.com, and you can go there if you'd like to access it.
So my favorite way to try and explain this is actually from the Satoshi Nakamoto paper. I assign that paper to my students. And even if you're not interested in the cryptocurrency side of it, I think it's the paper is only about 8 pages long. And what the paper explains very well is I kind of think of it as two key components to what makes up a blockchain. First is that any transaction is made public. It is announced to the network. And so, first of all, what makes this a paradigm shift from our current way of doing things is that our current system, transactions are private and they are managed by trusted third parties, either like a bank or some other type of custodian or trustee. Whereas in a blockchain, any given transaction is made public. That's the sense in which it is a distributed ledger. And then the key question or the problem that needs to be solved is who decides which of those transactions are legitimate and which are not. And so, you know, in our current system, we tend to delegate that to different entities that do settlement, clearing, to make sure that the books balance. And so if you think about it like an accountant with a green eye shade, making sure that the left side and right side line up, well, blockchain, that process in which transactions are verified is done by the community itself. And so if you think about Bitcoin, you might have heard about the process of mining. That is the process in which the miners are verifying the Bitcoin transactions. And so in any blockchain system, whether it's crypto or not, you need a form of consensus. And so it is the network itself which is maintaining the distributed ledger. And so it's a form of accounting, a form of data, which is much more shared than our current way of doing things.
In your example where you say everything's made public, it doesn't actually say Ben Jones owns this asset, right? It's actually some sort of just identifier that you know, serial number 725 owns this transaction, this transaction, this transaction. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. So the key thing to understand is there is both a public key and a private key. And so the public key is that identifier that everyone can see. And so in the example of crypto, like a digital wallet, and you can see value moving into and out of that wallet on the public blockchain. But the private key is what the owner of the wallet uses to access that. And therefore, only the true identity of the user is only known to the private key.
And if you lose that private key, you're sunk, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of funny stories about people who have like inherited or it was a gift that's very valuable now, but they can't find it. So they're trying to use hypnosis and other techniques to try and recover those keys.
When you think about blockchain and you've described now how it works, what are the benefits of blockchain and who do the benefits go to?
One way to think about the benefit of blockchain is disintermediation. So blockchain is like a peer-to-peer form of accounting or data management. And so by not requiring that additional step of external validation or data management, then you're basically removing that middleman. And so it's more efficient. And so there's a lot of excitement about blockchain applications, but many of them come back to, we can just sort of, it's doing bookkeeping at a lower cost. And so it's a cheaper way of doing it.
So it takes all the frictional costs of the transaction out.
Right.
And in theory, that should benefit both sides of the transaction.
Correct. So like one application, DePaul is hosting an event tomorrow focused on supply chain. And one of our panelists was telling me that they're trying to apply this specifically to accounts receivable. So they're a firm that sells natural gas and other products to this distribution network, their customers. And one of their frictions is there's delivery, and then the user, there's any sort of disagreement about the account receivable, then that can create a lot of friction. And so blockchain is a way of sort of reaching agreement more quickly and more efficiently. And so then ideally that would lower the cost of doing business and could potentially lower the cost of selling that product.
There are a lot of firms that take in goods and get an account payable out of that good, where the other firm has the account receivable, and they make a good amount of float waiting to pay that for 90 days because that's the term of their contract. In blockchain, does that happen instantly, or is that strategy just go away?
Yeah, that's a good question. What are the implications of blockchain for trade finance? This would be an example where blockchain could be applied to the actual physical product, or blockchain could be applied to the payment for that product. And they wouldn't necessarily have to be overlapping and synchronous. And so you could have a blockchain that would just record when delivery actually took place, but you could have payment that would be occurring later.
You've talked a little bit about the benefits. It takes a lot of the friction out of the transaction. It's more efficient, but there has to be some downsides. So what are some of the downsides or pitfalls of blockchain?
What a lot of people have focused on as it relates to cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in particular is like the cost of mining. So there's a lot of concerns about the rise of mining in certain developing countries like China, and even the energy that's being burned in order to do this. And what some people don't understand is that Bitcoin was sort of, that process of mining was designed to be inefficient, because it's a way to prevent a malicious node from overpowering the system. Because it's so costly, no individual node could expend so much energy to overwhelm the entire network. And so it's partly inefficient by design. But many of the newer cryptocurrencies have entirely different forms of consensus that don't require as much energy or as much computing power. So even that is evolving. And I would say the other concern about blockchain is, like, is it somehow dark or less transparent? Which is why many of the enterprise applications that people are considering on the corporate side are typically private blockchains. And so I think there's still this concern that using a public blockchain, whether that be Bitcoin or Ethereum or some other public chain, that you might be exposing your information to parties that you don't want to be doing that with. And so many of the enterprise applications are still sort of are called permissioned blockchains, where you get to decide who's inside the network.
So how are financial services starting to utilize blockchain technology?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the banks are thinking about this often first in terms of cross-border transactions. And so if you think about trade finance or some sort of foreign exchange component, then, you know, transactions that involve two entirely different banking systems can be very inefficient. So then you're not just, you know, trying to move money from bank A to bank B, but you're from one country to another country. And so blockchain is a way to sort of create an outside alternative for keeping record of these transactions. So I think it can be very efficient in terms of international global payments. And then another interesting aspect of blockchain is how you think about individuals and how do you keep track of a customer. Right now, we tend to think about some sort of internal identifier or maybe some sort of government identifier like a social security number. But there's a lot of talk around blockchain, around digital identity, which could really facilitate things like a credit registry or thinking about, you know, tracking multi-products across the same individual. So within banking, I think there's a lot of discussion about this. And then within financial markets, for sure. So many of the stock exchanges are exploring blockchain. Australian Stock Exchange is saying they're going to go all in on settlement and clearing using blockchain. A lot of discussion in Toronto, NASDAQ. And so I think it's really going to change many of the back office functions in the financial markets as well.
And now talk to me like a little bit more about that, because an exchange traditionally has played the role of the trusted third party or the middleman. And so when you say they're exploring going all in on blockchain, they're not exploring not becoming the trusted middleman. So how would something like that really work? You know, because if I think of blockchain, I think about, well, you no longer need the middleman exchange. But what you're saying is the exchange is trying to become the provider of the blockchain. So,
yeah, well, so I think of it maybe as a difference between a dealer and a broker. Uh-huh. So if you think about a dealer as being an actual part of the transaction, you know, buying from one party, selling to another party, whereas a broker is really about trying to bring two parties together. You know, I think the exchange ideally, and this is sometimes how we talk about it in the classroom, you know, it's like supply equals demand. And so ideally it's just bringing together the sellers and the buyers and providing a marketplace or a forum for them to meet. And so I don't necessarily think of exchanges as financial intermediaries. They are financial institutions which facilitate trading between buyers and sellers. And so I think these types of exchanges are sort of thinking about how do we create a system where buyers and sellers, when they transact, there is, you know, immediate agreement. So there's some discussion about like T equals zero clearing and settlement. So
and today it's T plus two.
That's right.
Yep.
And so blockchain could potentially facilitate.
And
that
when I started in this business, it was T plus three.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just gradual progression.
And so just to come back to the big idea of blockchain, it's like, how do you have multiple parties reaching agreement more efficiently? And if you think about an exchange where you're buying and selling these securities, how do we make sure we're all in agreement on a higher frequency and more efficiently?
These financial institutions using and exploring blockchain are an important thing to keep your eye on in terms of your practice. But your clients will be wondering, how does this impact me directly? Or maybe others will be wondering, how can I get in on the action? Or should I?
How would someone invest in blockchain, the technology, versus buying something that they might be more speculative?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because if you believe in blockchain, but maybe you're still a little unsure about crypto, the question is, how do you invest on that belief? And, you know, what's challenging at this point is that most of the blockchain innovators are still privately held startups. And so if you're not an angel investor, it can be hard to get involved. But, you know, there are now examples of some ETFs that are attempting to sort of invest in blockchain-oriented firms. Now, typically, that's not the actual blockchain innovators. It's corporations that are exploring blockchain. So it's a way to get some exposure. But my hope is that over time, as some of this goes mainstream, like if a blockchain startup does an IPO, then that can really give investors an opportunity to directly invest in the application.
How do you think that advisors' jobs would change or evolve as a result of these?
I think that's an interesting question because I'm not sure I've heard anyone talk about the immediate impact on financial advisors. You know, there's a lot of discussion now about robo-advising as the disintermediation of financial advice. And so automation and sort of algorithmic thinking, artificial intelligence is closely linked to this. And so, you know, there is a potential that blockchain would somehow empower robo-advising to be even more efficient. But, you know, when I think about blockchain and this idea of peer-to-peer, one thing that I was thinking about is, could it actually change the way people own financial assets? So, you know, it might change the nature of custodial relationships. You know, if you think about, like, one of the big issues in cryptocurrency right now is, how do you store your private key? And many people are now saying, if that key is held by a centralized exchange, then it's hackable. And so that's how cryptocurrency exchanges can be hacked. But if it's a decentralized exchange and the users are holding their individual private keys, then there's no way for that information or that value to be stolen. And so thinking about financial advice, you know, with the potential tokenization of financial assets, with the use of blockchain to record the transfer of value, could we see individuals having more control and more transparency around their financial portfolio?
How do you see the client experience itself changing with respect to blockchain? One thing you already alluded to was potentially getting to T plus zero one day, but what else from a client experience standpoint happens?
You know, I'm not sure I see blockchain as changing wealth management client experience tomorrow. This is, I think it's going to be a longer horizon, but to the extent that it could, you know, think about the innovations in supply chain. Many of them are trying to figure out, how do we interact with our clients in the supply chain without changing their experience? And so having the same user interface, the same portal for uploading information, potentially that could be applied to financial advice, where, you know, it's more interactive between the advisor and the client. Potentially a blockchain could be a way of recording the actions of the advisor and the interests or the preferences of the client, so that it would improve some sort of interaction between the two. You know, I don't necessarily see that changing tomorrow, but if we think about blockchain empowering the individual, then it might give them more control, and people might actually get more proactive in wealth management. I think some advisors could view that as a good thing.
Speaking of financial service applications for blockchain, BMO has been making headlines lately as it has begun to test use cases for this technology. Adita takes us through how BMO thinks about using blockchain and some real-world examples.
For us, it's very important to objectively define what are the characteristics that make up a use case where blockchain would be applicable. I mean, blockchain's not meant to be used for everything, and you should definitely not use blockchains where a centralized cloud application could do the job better, because blockchains are, honestly speaking, the overhead of setting it up and that whole overhead of getting everyone on the platform, that's quite a bit. And so if you can achieve what you're like, so we literally start, the first question we ask is, what we're trying to do here, can we do that just by building a cloud application on? And so if we can, and sounds like a perfect solution, well, we don't look at blockchain from that point on. The specific use cases that we're more looking at is, so we're actually looking at, what are the various activities that take place in capital markets that have intermediaries, right? Because the big win that Bitcoin and all these other blockchain projects have is really the promise that they make is, you don't need intermediaries anymore, right? Like, you can use smart contracts to automate a lot of, so asset issuance is one big area that we're, and that's the pilot that we ran, which was issuing a floating rate note on our blockchain platform. Of course, it was not a blockchain only issuance. Our blockchain was shadowing the primary issuance route, which is, so the bond was still settled in the traditional way, but we did mimic that issuance on our platform. So that's one, I mean, so, as an investment bank, yes, like you would think, you know, if you're connecting the issuers and the investors directly, we're kind of like cutting ourselves out of the picture. So that's really, time will tell how that's going to play out and what the role of an investment bank will be and how it's going to evolve going forward. There's still a role there for investment banks. So, I mean, everyone's trying to figure out what their role is going to be in this. But specifically when it comes to looking at use cases, those are the things we're really, really looking at, is for our clients and both our buy side and our sell side clients. If we can use technology to drastically bring down costs of their transactions, I'm sure there's value in it for them.
And so I want to talk specifically about the one that you were involved with, which is the debt offering that you guys did for, I believe it was Ontario Teachers. You mirrored it, as you mentioned earlier, but you mirrored this on the blockchain. So maybe just we could break this down for our listeners to understand how this is being used. But first of all, what was the thesis or problem that you were solving for?
For us, it was really like the whole purpose of this exercise was more about blockchain adoption than really going after a full use case and solving a problem, because regulation and compliance, we knew very early on that we could not do a blockchain only issuance. We can, it's just that it would take a lot longer for us to get the green signal from the regulators and our legal team. And so what we really wanted to do was test out a very basic use case. And so our problem statement, what we said is that, all right, so let's get a blockchain environment in place. So let's get a network going. Let's represent a bond on the blockchain. And let's see, using capabilities of a distributed ledger, what are the things that are apparent to us that... So it was more of a journey of discovery than like outright stating a thesis. And so once we did it, and the way we implemented, we ended up actually storing a lot of details of the term sheet on the blockchain as well. So one big takeaway from that was that documents that today have to sit on both counterparties or end counterparties, once you put that on the distributed ledger, it's just like that one document, the copy of that document is shared among all of us. So if that document is amended by anyone, you know, so no, you no longer have to have emails going back and forth between the back offices. So that was one takeaway for us. The second, obviously, being issuing the asset on it. On our blockchain, we deployed a smart contract that was tracking who the issuer of the asset was, who the investor was, the term sheet details, the coupon reset. So it was a floating rate note, paid interest once every month for the 12 months. Nothing on the blockchain that's stored as of today is like non-public information. So there's no elements of cash flows or those kind of things. Everything that's stored is, you know, you can look up those information on Bloomberg. And since we publicly announced who the investor was, there was no confidentiality there either. So these are the details that we're storing. And so all of these details are on a distributed ledger. So essentially now this blockchain platform tracks who the owner is and who the issuer is, which traditionally would be done by a central institution. The takeaway there, that does blockchain enable you to, you know, carry out the functions that these intermediaries were carrying out? And so if it does, what are the benefits? Are we getting rid of fees that might have been paid to these kind of intermediaries? So these are questions that will only get answered once we have a full-scale implementation. But at a very high level, the benefits and the efficiencies we saw was just being on a distributed ledger allowed us to have a more of the details associated with that trade, that the back office elements, a lot of that being on the distributed ledger allowed us to essentially share information with each other in a very like real time and without needing a lot of back and forth communication.
As you can see, we're just at the beginning of understanding the aspects in which blockchain will be used in our industry. And because it's early, it's unclear if this will be used as a disruptive technology by new entrants into financial services or a technology that's harnessed by incumbents in financial services, maybe both. For this reason, it's an important technology to keep up with as the applications evolve and the standards and practices will normalize over time. I asked Lamont what areas we should watch out for and where to go to get information on these topics.
Yeah, so this is a very rapidly changing area. And so I'm, to be honest, a big fan of social media, either LinkedIn or Twitter, as a way to to keep up to date with this. So if you think about just like something as simple as hashtag blockchain and keeping an eye on what's coming up, you know, but there are now people writing books on this. And so there's a book called The Blockchain Revolution. Don Tapscott is a figure who's sort of emerged in Canada as a thought leader in the blockchain space. And then the, you know, the people also in the developer community. So, you know, many of the people working in the Ethereum space are coming up with new applications all the time. And so, you know, I would encourage the listeners to keep an eye out for these new innovations because it's constantly changing.
If you were to summarize our entire conversation today, what would you say?
I would say blockchain has the power to function as a public infrastructure for unique ecosystems. And so if your business has some ecosystem of constituents or clients that could potentially benefit by having some interaction on a blockchain that would not require this sort of third-party model, then I think you should explore this. And I think even for those who are not thinking about it directly in their own business, thinking about how this could potentially transform the way we think about accounting, the way we think about data management, the way we think about financial transactions. You know, blockchain is a very basic technology that can be applied to many different problems. And as it starts to solve those different problems more efficiently than the way we have seen, you know, there's people who are, you know, comparing this to the information revolution. Now, I don't know if it's to that degree, but, you know, I'm very excited to be living during this period. So I think we're going to see interesting things.
Very nice. And if you were going to write your own warning label on the discussion today, what would your warning label say?
I think my warning label would be to not be swayed too far to either the upside or the downside. What I find is that there are some people who are really taking very strong positive positions. Blockchain is amazing. It's the best. Some people taking very negative positions. You know, this is fraud and or foolishness. But, you know, I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. And so I would encourage the listeners to do their homework, to continue trying to learn just like they are through this podcast so that they can make their own informed choices and ideally so that they can figure out where they can plug in and participate.
Thanks to Lamont and Adita for making time to share their insights. We'll have all the links they mentioned as well as ways to follow their work on our show notes page at bmogam.com/betterconversations.
Thank you for listening to Better Conversations, Better Outcomes. This podcast is presented by BMO Global Asset Management. To access the resources discussed in today's show, please visit us at www.bmogam.com/betterconversations.
We love feedback and would love to hear what you thought about today's episode. You can send an email to betterconversations@bmo.com.
And we really respond.
We do.
If you thought of someone during today's episode, we would be flattered if you'd take a moment and share this podcast with them. You can listen and subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcast provider is. And of course, we would very greatly appreciate if you take a moment to rate or review us on that app. This show and resources are supported by a very talented team of dedicated professionals at BMO, including Pat Bordak, Gail Gibson, Matt Perry, Derek Devereaux. The show is edited and produced by Jonah Guile Newfield and Annie Fassler of Puddle Creative. And these are the real people that make the show happen. So thank you. Until next time, I'm Ben Jones.
And I'm Emily Larson. From all of us at BMO Global Asset Management, hoping you have a productive and wonderful week.
The views expressed here are those of the participants and not those of BMO Global Asset Management, its affiliates, or subsidiaries. This is not intended to serve as a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any company, industry, strategy, or security. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements. Investors are cautioned not to place undue reliance on such statements as actual results could vary. This presentation is for general information purposes only and does not constitute investment, legal, or tax advice and is not intended as an endorsement of any specific investment product or service. Individual investors should consult with an investment, legal, and/or tax professional about their personal situation. Past performance is not indicative of future results. BMO Asset Management Corp is the investment advisor to the BMO funds. BMO Investment Distributors, LLC is the distributor. Member FINRA SIPC. BMO Asset Management Corp and BMO Investment Distributors are affiliated companies. Further information can be found at www.bmo.com.